This is Evolutionary Radio. This is your host, Trevor Caritzen. Joining me, as always, is my loyal and faithful co-host, Steve Smee.
Yes, and we got the Mason as well, joining us from his bunker up there in Canada.
I'm here, ready to go. Another great show planned.
It's a busy time for me and Matt. Today is Labor Day, so tomorrow's back to school. I'm a graduate student, so I'm going back to the university, even though I'm in classes year round. You know, everyone's kind of takes things more seriously back in September. Matt, how about you? Are all your little ones ready to get back to it tomorrow? They must be super excited. Hey,
they are not excited to go back. They have a great summer. They do a whole bunch of sports camps and everything. So on one hand, they're excited to see their friends, but they don't want to get back to the actual schoolwork.
Steve's, I guess, the only one not sharpening some new pencils, getting them ready to go. Steve, do you miss university at all?
Sometimes, you know, like it was fun. It wasn't too bad. But the college I went to was, pretty overcrowded. So it was pretty much like,
this is university in a nutshell. The first couple weeks, it's great. You know, you're seeing everyone you haven't seen all summer. There's a bunch of cute new girls in your classes. You know, you're learning a bunch of new topics. There's not really any hard homework assignments or anything like that. And then about midterms roll around and everyone gets busy and you remember why you dreaded this crap in the first place.
Well, it depends, you know, what college you go to. Some colleges, you don't even have to show up to classes. You just show up for the test. Some classes, you know, you have to show up every day because the professor counts. So it just depends on the school. If I had to do it again, I'd go to a smaller college that had like small class sizes, you know, that way you get like a one-on-one type of
thing. Well, the further you get into academia, the more and more specialized it gets and the smaller your classes are. Like a graduate course, it only has maybe 10 to 12 people. So, I mean, like you can't skip that because the professor knows everyone by their first name. It's very different. And then like a PhD course, you know, there'll only be maybe 3 or 4 people in the class. Like it's very, very small.
Yeah, I'm surprised you're not going to like an Ivy League school, Trevor. You're a pretty smart guy.
Well, University of Manitoba is actually the best or the second best human nutritional school in Canada. I'd say it's either University of Manitoba or Guelph. You have to remember, industry funds research, right? So we have a lot of agriculture in Manitoba. So it's probably the best nutrition university in Canada, if not. If it's not number one, it's close second to Guelph.
Yeah, I just want to say to young guys listening, if you're in high school or, you know, you're going into college and stuff, like education's very important. Once you get Matt and I's age, you know, getting a good quality job, it's really important to have a really good education and, you know, don't stop school, you know, don't have the attitude where, you can still start a business. I started a business myself right out of high school myself, and I still run that business, but you should also finish your education. You can take online classes and stuff because it's very important to have a good education for sure. It's even though like a lot of times college is bullshit, you know, you take these classes, you're like, why the fuck am I learning about inert gases and taking theater survey and learning about Shakespeare and all this crap? But I mean, really, like, you know, it'll pay off later in life for sure.
Focus on your marks in high school, not so you can just get into university, but also so you can get scholarships, because it is extremely expensive, you know, especially if you're in the States where it's not subsidized at all. I mean, tuition in the United States, if you're going to an Ivy League school, you can look at like $40,000-$50,000 per semester. So definitely, if you're one of our younger listeners, take your education seriously. So, speaking about academia, our first topic is Carterin and cancer. So, there's been some really cool studies done lately that use Carterin in human test subjects, which is very different than the first set of studies that were done in rats. So, basically all these studies validated what we already knew. You know, cardamom is great for enhancing endurance. It's great for increasing fat oxidization. It's great for improving muscle insulin sensitivity, improving cholesterol levels by increasing HDL levels, lowering LDL levels, lowering total triglyceride levels. But what's very, very interesting in these studies is that they actually had a cancer protective effect. So the people who were taking cardarin were less likely to develop cancer than the people who weren't taking cardarin. So there's a couple of reasons for that. So first, that rat study that everyone, you know, talks about, and that's the rat study that kind of everyone on the boards brings up, they were using absurd dosages. I mean, if you use absurd dosages of anything, you're going to get cancer. That's a given. The second thing is this is, again, where it comes down to, you know, reading the actual article versus just reading the abstract, is that cardarin didn't make those mice develop cancer. What happened is they basically injected all the mice with genes that would cause them to develop cancer, but the rats that were given the cardarin just developed cancer faster. So cardarin didn't cause the cancer to develop. It basically made the cancer grow faster. And the third thing is that this is something that no one would really know unless you're in academia, is rats, for whatever reason, get cancer very, very easily. That's why we always use rats for cancer models and cancer studies. It's really weird and no one knows why, but certain mammals get cancer very easily and certain mammals don't. Like dolphins don't get cancer. Dolphins do not get cancer for whatever reason, but they're a mammal just like us. Rats get cancer super easily. Like it's one of those things, no one knows why. It's very interesting though. Steve, I'll let you go in, then we'll let Matt go in.
Well, I wonder if that's because rats don't live very long, especially like city rats, like that live like in your residential area.
Because there's a type of bat. Can't remember. It's a specific strain of bat and they don't get cancer either, which is very, very interesting. Like there's a couple mammals that we're trying to learn why they don't get cancer. And we're seeing if there's maybe something in their DNA that we could extrapolate and, you know, maybe learn something from. But there's a couple mammals that don't get cancer and they're not all long living mammals. So.
Oh, really? Bats are more, different. They're not really like rodents. They're not rodents at all. They're like more,
They're a weird species, man. They like break all the rules with everything. Like it's,
but I'm not sure what study you're looking at, but there was a study about 2 years ago done on Australian men where they did 6 months of cardarin and they actually found out that they had less cancer than they would have before. There was no evidence of cancer or anything. So we do have human studies on cardarin. You know, you see sometimes on these forums, guys, you know, they try to be smart. They think they're so fucking smart, but really they don't know shit. You know, they'll say, oh, there's never been studies on humans. And it's like, yeah, there have been actually. So there are human studies on cardarin. And, you know, we know that cardarin reduces diabetes, reduces obesity, reduces blood pressure, cholesterol, and even reduces the chances of tumors in the body. So actually it was developed, one of the reasons it was developed was to reduce tumors. So, you know, like a lot of these people and they're like, oh, it was stopped because it caused cancer. No, it wasn't stopped because it caused cancer. The reason it was stopped is we don't know why. Drug companies don't disclose that information. It could be any reason why.
It's actually still being studied. That's why the new human trials have been released. Cardarin is a PPAR agonist. Before I even knew anything about cardarin, when someone said cardarin would cause cancer, the first thing that came to my mind is some of the healthiest things you can take are PPAR agonists, like fish oil. Fish oil is a very, very strong PPAR agonist. That's why when you take fish oil, it improves your cholesterol levels, it improves muscle insulin sensitivity. So I just don't see scientifically how a PPAR agonist could even promote causing cancer because it's not a hormone, but that's beyond the scope of all of this. Matt, what are your thoughts on this besides, you know, give me a big high five and hey, keep taking my cardarin.
I'm more interested at this point now on where this goes. So I'm assuming that there will continue to be studies on humans And if the results are similar to this study that have a lot of benefits without, you know, really any negatives that I'm aware of, I'm curious to see if it's something that the drug companies will take a hold of and, you know, kind of keep to themselves, and then it basically becomes illegal without a prescription, or if it's something that will somehow make its way into the supplement world if it is proven to be safe. So I guess, you know, it's probably still years, right, before anything like that were to happen.
But pharmaceuticals is big business. It's just a matter of time before it gets patented by a pharmaceutical company and illegal without a prescription. Pharmaceutical companies actually tried to make, you know, dietary supplements like fish oil to require a prescription. They actually tried to do that. And you can get prescription grade fish oil. The FDA just said, hey, we'll let you make pharmaceutical grade fish oil, but we're not going to say that the fish oil that's currently being sold as a supplement, we're going to take that off the market. You can actually get your doctor to prescribe you fish oil, which is really, it's no better than any other fish oil, but you can actually get your doctor to write you a prescription for fish oil.
Yeah. I just want to say, you know, I'm not one of these conspiracy people, Trevor, but if something like works this well as cardarine does, cardarine is probably the best thing since chopped liver or whatever. What is the saying? The best
thing sliced bread since sliced bread.
Chopped liver. But here's the thing, like, why would the pharmaceutical companies want to put something out that actually helps with obesity, helps with blood pressure, helps with cholesterol, all this stuff? I don't think they do. I think they want people being fatter. I think they want people being sicker. So I think for them, figuring out, man, this is some good shit, I think for them, it'd probably be better. It's like finding a cure for cancer.
Like, I agree with you on this.
There's money in treating cancer. There's money in treating diabetes, but there's no money in curing diabetes. So we've seen guys like electricity. When electricity was invented, the guy who invented electricity was Tesla. And he actually had a patent for it. And he ripped the patent up. And he said, you know what? It's more important for everyone to enjoy electricity than me to make money off electricity. If he had kept that patent, you know, electricity would be so much more expensive. I mean, it would have expired eventually, but my point is, like, you know, there's a, you know, pharmaceutical companies have one job, and that's to make money, and they make a shitload of money. And the ones that, you know, start out, they lose money because they're still in research or trying to get a drug approved. But once they get to that process where they get drugs approved, they start raking in so much fucking money, it's sickening. So you know, that's just the way it works. So I'm not sure if they'll ever want cardarine to be available over the counter or by prescription. I don't see it happening anytime soon, but we'll see.
I'll say one more thing and we'll move into our next topic. The cost of drugs, all of it goes into research and development. The actual cost to produce the drugs is like pennies. Like, this is something you would never know unless you've actually made drugs. Like, the cost to make Tylenol, a bottle of Tylenol literally costs them 2 cents. You know, so it's literally all they spend all this money on research and development. They spend, you know, millions upon millions upon millions of dollars. But once they have it, once they have that patent, they're literally have a license to print money. So, again, pharmaceutical companies are big business. I just see it's a matter of time before, you know, it's going to get picked up by a big pharmaceutical company. I say probably the next 5 to 10 years. So our next topic is DECA and water retention. And I've got a question for you, Steve. So if someone ran just DECA by itself as a cycle, would they get a lot of water retention from that cycle? Or do you need to have a testosterone base to, you know, experience the, you know, water retention of bloat most people get on a test DECA cycle?
This is a really good question. First off, DECA only aromatizes a fifth as much as testosterone. And that's something that people don't quite understand out there. In the old days, they used to run DECA over testosterone because they didn't have AIs. So yes, if you run DECA by itself, you will get way less water retention than if you were to run it with testosterone. So, you know, that's pretty much the way, you know, they used to do. Back in those days, they didn't run testosterone.
So people always compare EQ and DECA. how much does EQ Arimatase in comparison to DECA? Does EQ Arimatase even less than DECA?
Yes, I would say it does. Just a little bit less, yeah. But if you were to run either alone, you know, you might want to run just a little bit of an AI. But either one doesn't aromatize very much.
Okay, so then, so like when someone runs like a test DECA bulking cycle and they say they're retaining all this water, is that mainly from the high test then?
Yes.
Okay, that's really interesting. And then NPP versus DECA, I guess that would basically be the same thing because it's just different esters. It's the same drug.
Yeah, I think that the longer ester of, like we know with EQ, the long ester EQ, the U ester, aromatizes way less than if you were to run the short ester of EQ, which would be the boldenone, like the shorter ester boldenone. Because it aromatizes so slow that your body kind of, you know, absorbs it, you know, and it's in and out.
Yeah, so, it's kind of like D-ball because the half-life is so short, it aromatizes so fast, it's extremely estrogenic. Yeah,
so even if you run like aromacin with D-ball, you can't even keep up with aromatization because the D-ball aromatizes so fucking fast in the body, you're still going to blow it up anyway. So it's
You know what's really interesting about D-ball is that since D-ball is methylated, it actually aromatizes into a methylated form of estrogen that's much stronger than regular estrogen because it survives your liver, so it has a second pass, so it hits you twice. I don't know if you knew that.
You know, I did not know that, but that's...
Oh, I'm so stoked. I actually taught something with steroids. Wow.
Well, I mean, either way, you need to run liver protection, so...
No,
in the end, it's the same, you know, concept, so... But that is interesting, yeah.
Yeah, so it... instead of 17 estradiol, it aromatizes into 17 methyl estradiol. And basically it's a methylated form of estrogen. So anything methylated survives the first pass through your liver. So basically it acts like normal estrogen, but then when it hits your liver, it survives. So it hits you twice. So it almost has like a rebound effect.
Yeah. I actually read that within the past week. And I think that I'm not going to say where I read it, but I think you read the same thing I read, and we'll leave it at that.
Maybe. I don't think very many people knew that. So it's probably one article that we both read. Matt, what are your thoughts on DECA? Is this a steroid you like? What does the Mason say?
DECA, I think it's great. I think it's just people are scared of it because they're scared of the, you know, in quotes, DECA dick. I think when you talk about EQ and DECA and the aromatization, I think the issue we run into with EQ is that, so with DECA, ask somebody what their dosage is going to be. I can almost guarantee it's going to be between 300 and 500 milligrams per week, kind of min max. But when you talk to guys about EQ, it can go from 300 up to, you know, a gram per week. So I think because it does aromatize slowly, guys get this impression that it's not doing as much as they want it to do. I think expectations get a little bit out of whack. So they just run a crazy high dose. So then even though it does aromatize slowly, you're still aromatizing a ton more than, you know, if you were running a reasonable dose. But I think DECA, like Steve makes a great point that guys tend to run their test really high or they run D-ball with it. And for whatever reason, everybody wants to blame the DECA. But if you run your cycle properly, you don't go crazy, you can actually have a fairly lean cycle without a lot of water. So I think, you know, more and more people will try it the more that we talk about it and they learn how to run it properly, kind of the way that Steve lays it out with Proviron and everything in your cycle.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, Steve. Like, let's say someone had the goals of, you know, like a really clean cycle, like not necessarily like a cutting cycle, but, you know, really clean, lean mass, no water retention. What did you think of, you know, like DECA, Proviron, and then maybe like Primo or Anavar? What would you think about that cycle layout?
You're still missing an androgen there to give it a little kick. So I know in the old days,
but this person, like I said, like they want it like a lean mass cycle. Like they don't really care about strength. They're just looking just for cosmetics, kind of like a men's physique athlete or like a model.
Yeah, actually, Arnold, that was what he liked to run. You hit the nail on the head on that. He would run 100 milligram a day Primo. He'd run Deca, and then he'd run Proviron every day. And that was those three were his stack. That was his favorite. I think it's a beautiful stack. My favorite Deca stack, though, would be Deca and Tren, because you're combining an androgen with an androgenic, and that would be something. I want to run that so bad. I've never run it before. When I get healthy, fully healthy, hopefully in the next year or two, I'm going to run that, and that's going to be something that's something you actually may want to run. I mean, at some point, because that's you or Matt may want to run that. I mean, if you guys are healthy, I mean, that would basically, I mean, you would just put on so much.
I'm too scared to lose my hair, so I'll leave that to Matt. But what about, you always hear you don't want to stack two nandrolones, like, you know, Deca is an androlone and then Tren is an androlone derivative. Don't you think you might run into like prolactin issues or, you know, like a Deca dick issue if you add Proviron? That's not going to be an issue.
No, it's not going to be an issue. Just add Proviron, yeah. But I mean, the prolactin, you can always just run Caber. I mean, I don't think if you abuse Tren long term, you'll get prolactin issues, but in the short term, you won't get it. I mean, prolactin is one of those things that it fluctuates up and down. So I think just like,
it's also one of those things where some people are sensitive to it and some people aren't. You know, most people can run Deca or Tren and they're not going to have any prolactin issues, but there's that 1% who, you know, runs a little bit of Tren and his nipples start lactating. So, I mean, I'm personally of the opinion, this is something me and Steve disagree on. I always say, hey, run cabergolin. It's not going to affect you. Prolactin is not a hormone that's even needed by men. If you're using a sensible dosage, you know, I think it's a good idea just in case, you know, you're that 1% that's really sensitive to prolactin. No one wants to have lactating nipples in the middle of their cycle. That's my advice. Steve says you kind of don't really need it, which is true, but I say it doesn't hurt. Might as well throw it in there.
I think there's been like two or three guys in my 10 years on forums who actually had brown nipples from Tren, and they, both of them were stupid. They just ran Tren like for a year straight.
So I saw it in person, Steve. And after seeing it in person, I'm pro anti-prolactin drugs, because it was freaking weird seeing.
But how long were you running the Tren?
No, it wasn't me. It was my buddy.
No, how long did he run the Tren?
I think just a couple weeks, but he was using a lot. Like, he's using 100 milligrams of Tren Ace every day.
Huh. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I guess if he's telling the truth, then I guess if you're just running a lot of it and if you're running it for a long period of time, it's going to open yourself up to it. So yeah, definitely run. I would keep the Caber on hand either way. You should keep Caber on hand. And you should keep Letro on hand always, because, you know, shit happens, you know, and you always want to keep your ancillaries on hand. So unless you can get those things quick, I know AG guys ships very, very quick. So, I mean, if something were to happen, you can always just order from them. They usually get it to you within a few days.
Even then, I just keep it on hand. I mean, the shelf life of, you know, liquid letrozole and liquid cabergolin, you're looking at like 5-6 years, and they're not expensive. I mean, just order it and keep it in your sock drawer, you know, like save it for a rainy day. Cause like, just like, yeah, agguys.com, they're US domestic, they ship fast, but you never know, like maybe someone that week orders 100 vials and they're out of stock. Right. So I'd say just order it before your cycle, have it on hand.
Yeah. Always have your ancillaries on hand just in case. There's no reason not to.
So we'll get into our next topic. I'll let Matt go first, cause he's been a little bit quiet on this episode. So I had a really, really great email question. Basically, there's a lot of training programs on the net that have full body workouts, you know, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. You know, I can think of a lot of powerlifting, a lot of starting strength programs, things like that. So this person basically emailed. He said, hey, time isn't really an issue for me. You know, I got a lot of time. What do you think of, instead of doing a full body workout 3 days per week, doing upper, lower, upper, lower, upper, lower. So basically splitting up those workouts into 6 days per week. Matt, I'll let you go and then Steve go and then I'll finish up.
I think it's personal for me. I like the shorter workouts better. I've been doing that for a while now. I like I can do a workout in 45 minutes and that's more than enough. I mean, I like to go in, do what I got to do, focus and go home. You know, you'll never burn out. you won't get that mental, you know, spot where you're like, oh, I still got five more exercises to go, if you're, you know, not completely motivated that day, or, you know, whatever's going on. We all have lives outside of the gym. So for me, I find I recover better too, with the shorter workouts. Like I can basically do, you know, 5 to 7 exercises depending on what I'm doing. And it's easy enough. It's less trips to fill up my water bottle. I'm just in my zone. I can, you know, my meal that I had beforehand would still be in me, so I'm still fueled. It's just easier. It's easier to fit into your schedule when you have other things going on. So if time doesn't matter, and you know, for me, if I have the choice, I'm always going to go, you know, more often for less time. I enjoy going, but I also don't want to be there for 2 and 3 hours at a time. So that's the way that I would do it.
Matt, do you have a Costco membership?
Yes, I do.
I can tell you're one of those people who's in and out of Costco in 20 minutes. You just walk right past the sample ladies. You walk right past that guy trying to sell you a Vitamix. You're just like, okay, this. Pick the shortest line. Here's my money. No, I don't want to sign up for a new MasterCard. Out and done.
Yeah, there's times that I do that, but then just as many, there's times where I walk out with the $300-$400 bill too.
That's how they get you, man. As soon as you start going down those aisles and you start just seeing what's there, then you go, oh man, 40 steak knives for $11. Like, I'm a bachelor and I live by myself, so I don't know what I would need 40 steak knives for, but that's a really good deal. I should definitely, it'd almost be a crime not to buy this.
You know what? That's a topic for another day. You actually did a really good video maybe a year or so ago where you were shopping in Costco, and it's great for, you know, like typical bodybuilder foods. You can really, by the end of the year, save a ton of money if you go there and get the right stuff.
Steve, what are your thoughts on this training topic?
I think that, you know, there's really two ways to approach this. You know, there's one or the other. You can go 3 days a week, hard each day for like an hour, 15 minutes, really, really hard workout. Or you can go every day, light workout, you know? So it just depends on your lifestyle and your life and your career and your family and all that shit. Like for me, you know, like think about it too. If you live, I used to drive 45 minutes to my gym, 40, 45 minutes to my gym. And it was the only gym. I lived in this little, you know, town, and the only decent gym was 45 minutes away. My other gym option was like a Planet Fitness or some shit. So the only like hardcore gym was like 45 minutes away. So for me going there every day, it was much easier to go there 3-4 times a week only because of the drive. But if you live like walking distance to your gym, then, you know, it makes sense. Hey, you can go every day and do a lighter workout. But also, what about your other things you do during the week? Like, I went kayaking Saturday. Then today I went and did hot yoga. You know, I do other shit besides going to the gym. There's other activities I like to do. And there's other activities that give you a really good workout. So, you know, for me, I pretty much stick to 3, maybe 4 times a week at the gym. And then the other days I'm doing other stuff. So I'll do like a pretty moderate workout those 3-4 days a week, and I'm able to maintain what I have. You know, I'm not really worried about improving. I mean, I have a lot of muscle mass already, so I'm not really looking to improve. So I think if you're looking to improve, maybe, you know, try to put in more hours than that, maybe 4 or 5 times a week. I don't really know, but you know, it's just depends. Like if you work at the gym, then you can work out every day. You know, that's fine. You just don't want to pound your body into the dirt every day. You're just going to work out lighter every day.
I'm going to build on what Steve says, and I'm going to segue this a little bit. So one thing that always kind of boggles my mind is, you know, most people, like, they kind of sit on their butt for 8 hours and they go to the gym. They do an hour of crazy working out and they sit on their butt for another 7 hours and then go to the bed. Like, no one does like non-physical activity outside of the gym. Like, no one goes for walks anymore. No one like does like yard work or like, it just like, it always just like blows my mind. It's like, you don't have to go to the gym to do cardio. You could just walk your dog. You could, you know, go on a bike ride. You could go on a hike if you live by, you know, maybe some trails. If you live like Steve and you're in Florida and you're close to the ocean, you could go kayaking. Like, you don't have to go to the gym to exercise. You know, same, like, you don't have to go to the gym to get a good workout. Like, try hiking up a mountain. Your legs will be trashed the next day. So, or try snowboarding or skiing, or if you're in Canada. But this is something I've been reading a lot about lately, and this is something I'm thinking about trying. I'm thinking about trying a full body workout every single day. Because basically what happens is when you go to the gym, you stimulate muscle protein synthesis, and then your body, you know, repairs and rebuilds that muscle. So the traditional bodybuilding sense, you know, is like a 5 or 6 day split. You'd go in, you would crush chest. You'd absolutely destroy it. Your muscle protein synthesis for chest would be elevated through the roof for about 48 hours, but then you're not stimulating chest anymore for the rest of the week, right? Because you're only hitting chest once per week. So what if you trained every single day? Now, you couldn't do a ton of volume. This is something you'd have to train from. You'd have to be able to recover from. But what if you trained every single day, but just did enough to stimulate every single muscle? So you elevated that muscle protein synthesis. It would almost be like a staircase, because your muscle protein synthesis is elevated for about 48 to 72 hours after your workout. So if you worked out again the next day, your muscle protein synthesis from your previous workout would still be up elevated, and then you'd elevate it again. So it'd be like a synergistic, like, stacking effect. Again, like, no one's ever done this. Like, there's never been a study on, but this is just kind of something I've been thinking about, you know. I think like a like maybe like one set per body part every single day, maybe like 6 days per week. I think that could be a super effective workout plan. What do you guys think?
I think it'd be worth it to try something like that. I mean, the closest example I could think of would be guys that are in certain trades where they're lifting stuff every day, like roofers or like concrete workers. And a lot of the times, you really notice, like, they got bigger arms, their forearms are pretty defined and big. So I think it's something to try. I'd be interested in. I think that definitely could be effective if you know, found the right volume. I think it'd probably take a few times to experiment with it.
Steve, what do you think?
If you're looking to improve, Trevor, and you've got, like, you know, you want to improve either your strength or you want to build a lot of muscle and really stimulate the muscles. Absolutely. If you're able to train every day, absolutely, man. Of course, it would be better. As long as you're not, like, you know, pounding your body into the dirt, you know, like any professional athlete, their mind is on their sport.
Yeah, that's where
they're not. But they're not pounding their body every day. Like hockey players, they'll play like a game, and then they'll play maybe another game the next day. Then they'll have a day off. Then they'll have, you know, they might play a third game, maybe 3 out of 4 days. But then they'll give them like a couple days off to rest their bodies. Then they'll play another game. And in football players, they play a game once a week, and then they'll have like one padded practice a week, and they'll have like a walkthrough, but their mind is on it constantly. And if you're trying to, you know, succeed at whatever you're doing, you have to have your mind on that at all times. That's why people who like work at the gym, that's their life. People who work at the gym, you see these people, they kind of work out, you know, here and there, and then they'll do their personal training, you know, when their clients come in, and then they'll switch back into the workout clothes and do some more workouts, and they like look great because that's where their mind is all fucking day. It's just like on the gym stuff. So yeah, of course you're gonna have great results, but can you stick to it? You know, because you have got school, you have a job, you've got family stuff, you have, you know, other shit happens in life, you're traveling.
I don't have any family stuff, man. My family's not close at all.
Yeah. But I'm saying a normal person.
When I call my dad, I'm like, hey, dad, it's Trev. He's like, who? I'm like, your son. He's like, oh yeah, what do you want? Like, my family, we're not close at all.
Yeah, I think if you want to, like I said, you want to stick to it, man, do it. I mean, it's fantastic. For the normal person, this is not what we're trying to strive for. We have a normal life, you know, so.
I'm going to say one more thing, then we'll move into our next topic. So weightlifting, when it really comes down to it, it's a skill. You know, squatting, deadlifting, bench pressing, those are all skills. So I was thinking, you know, how do you get better at a skill? You know, if you ask the average person, you know, on the street, like, hey, how do you get better at doing layups? They'd say, well, you practice layups every day. So, I mean, how do you get better at squatting? You would practice squatting every day. So I kind of just thought this in like an extreme sense, you know, like, let's say, Steve, someone had your girlfriend for ransom and they said, you know, I'm going to kill your girlfriend unless you add 100 pounds to your squat. What would you do? Would you squat once per week? No, you'd be in there every single day squatting, you know, probably even twice per day. And, you know, so I think there's a lot of merit to overtraining. It's just, I think it's very easy to get burnt out mentally because basically you would live in the gym. So I think it's trying to finding that balance where you're training very, very frequently, but it's enough that it doesn't feel like it's a chore. It doesn't feel like it's a second job. So our next topic, and this is a topic Steve's going to like because he's a big football fan, healthy snacks to eat while watching the game. I'm going to say a recipe I've started using, which is really, really awesome. And then I'll let Matt go and I'll let Steve go. So chicken fingers. Kids love chicken fingers. Everyone loves chicken fingers. What am I saying? I love chicken fingers. If you take, you know, boneless, skinless chicken breast, cut it up into strips like chicken breast would look, and then you either take, you know, like a Rice Krispie cereal, corn flakes, something like that. I use those options because they're gluten-free and low in sugar. And you just roll the chicken breast in that and then bake it. It tastes exactly like a chicken strip. It's not near as high calorie as chicken strips because obviously it's not deep fried. You're adding a little bit of carbs, but I mean, they're good quality carbs anyways. Give that a try. It's awesome. It doesn't even feel like you're eating bland chicken breast. It feels like you're eating chicken strips. And then you can dip them. Superstore, I don't think you have that in the States. They make a really good sugar-free ketchup. I think Heinz makes a sugar-free ketchup. Man, I made those and I was eating them with some sugar-free ketchup. I felt like I was back in, you know, elementary school. It was awesome. Matt, give us one of your recipes and we'll let Steve go.
Yeah, so what I like to do is take a coconut oil spray and I'll spray it on a baking sheet, preheat the oven to like 425-ish, and take a whole bunch of different vegetables. Like carrots are good, zucchini is really good, squash is really good, and you just put them into little strips and you bake them for a while. They get crunchy and they're almost like, I don't know, chips, fries, something like that. It's really like, you feel like it's a cheat snack. All you have to put on them is like maybe a little salt and pepper and they're good. And you can also, a tip for a dip, if you're just going to have some raw veggies, which are great because they'll keep you full. They're mostly water. There's a lot of fiber. And they won't make you want to, you know, just keep eating other foods. You'll just stick to those and you're good. You can make your own hummus. All you really need is chickpeas. You could throw in some garlic, maybe some salt, and that's all you really need. And then you have yourself a dip too. So in the end, I think anything homemade is always going to be so much better. So if you just check out like YouTube or you just Google some recipes, there's so much out there. But I always like to stick with vegetables as the base just because they're super low calorie.
I make my own hummus as well. I do basically what Matt does. I'll buy a can of chickpeas, you know, drain it, rinse it, throw it in a blender, throw in some garlic powder, some fresh lemon juice, maybe some parsley, maybe some oregano. The secret, and this is Trevor's secret here, I'm giving out on Evolutionary Radio. You put in some hot sauce. No one's gonna know what that little tang is, but oh man, it makes that hummus just like way, way better. And then not only that, the entire, you get like this massive thing of hummus and a can of chickpeas is like 85 cents. And then everything else you pretty much have probably on hand anyways. Steve, what's your recipe? Yeah.
But I mean, the calories of the hummus is pretty strong.
No. The problem with normal hummus is they add tzatziki, which is a sesame seed paste, which makes it very, very high calorie because it's high fat. But if you're just using, you know, chickpeas, lemon juice, things like, it's very, very low calorie. Like a cup of chickpeas has maybe 150 calories and it's like all fiber. Very, very low calorie. The recipe me and Matt suggested.
Oh, interesting. I think a good one, like, let's be realistic. Like, this is probably going to be like your cheat day. you know, for the game and stuff, for tailgating or something. I'm going to go with a couple ones that I like to do when I'm tailgating. I like to get grass-fed beef, 95% or 90%, and basically press it. And then I'm going to basically, you know, throw it on the barbecue. You barbecue it however you like, and then get basically lettuce, a lettuce wrap, and then wrap it up in lettuce and eat that versus using a bun. And I think that's a really good tailgate idea. Really, you know, it's...
So kind of like little burgers, but instead of using buns, you're using lettuce, kind of like that? Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. And then you use like natural, like, you know, you put tomato in there, whatever toppings, pickle, mustard, tomato. Yeah, mustard has like zero calories. If you use natural tomato versus like ketchup, it doesn't have as much calories. You know, and then, you know, that would be a really good tailgate option. If you like wings, they sell wings in any, you know, decent supermarket. They actually sell plain wings, and this way you don't have to buy the wings from wherever, because the wings that you buy are going to be fried and they're going to be drenched in condiments. So what you can do is make your own wings by getting basically the raw wings, baking them instead of frying, and then you can add a little bit of you know, good quality barbecue sauce, which is still going to have a lot of calories, but it's not going to be as bad as the barbecue sauces that they use when they fry them. And they usually fry them in like canola oil, and or if you go to any of these places, they use like hydrogenated oils and shit. So that's way healthier. So if you're doing like a party, you know, do the wings and then do some guac. And then get some like corn chips. The corn chips have less calories than, you know, the tortilla chips. And then that would be a healthier situation. And I like what you guys said as well. Like you get have some hummus, you can have some vegetables, like Matt said. You can also chop up sweet potatoes into fries and bake those. And it would be similar to the recipe Matt said. You get a baking sheet, spray it with your coconut spray, zero calories. Chop up the sweet potatoes into small pieces and lay them out flat and cook that for about 20 to 25 minutes. And that at like 410 degrees. And that's a nice little healthier snack than getting French fries, which are fried in canola oil. So those are healthier options. You're basically eating the same foods you would normally eat, but it's like half as much calories and it's fresh and homemade, and it's very easy to make. So those are options for you if you have a party.
While you got that baking sheet out, you can actually make your own corn chips very, very easy. So if you buy some high quality corn tortillas, the only ingredient in them will be yellow corn flour or yellow cornmeal. They might also have like a bit of salt or water. Some have some like spices added, but basically it's basically just gonna be cornmeal. And you basically just cut those into, you know, quarters. And then you bake them and they bake up and they crisp up and it's just like a corn chip, but it's not deep fried. I know Matt wanted to chime in and then we'll finish up our last two topics. We've got about 15 minutes left.
Yeah, just two quick things. The lettuce wrap that Steve mentioned for a burger instead of a bun, it sounds kind of funny, but until you try it, I'm telling you, it's a great option. You won't miss the bread at all. And it's lettuce is practically calorie free. So try it and see how it goes. Also, you can swap out the meat if you're not a big ground beef or, you know, just a big meat fan. And you can just go with a big portobello mushroom. Those are great as well as a burger. And another dip that I wanted to mention quick is salsa. Basically just vegetables, right? It's really low calorie and you can use that for anything, even if you're going to cheat with a chip.
Be careful with the salsa, though. Some salsas have a lot of sugar added.
Always read your labels.
Exactly. There's a lot of really good salsas that it's just vegetables, but you really have to be careful because there are some salsas and they're actually normally the more expensive ones that have a bunch of sugar added. But I mean,
you can make your own salsa. It's not that hard. Just go on YouTube.
We're bachelors, man. We'll just buy it. Okay. Our second last topic, tapering up and tapering down your steroid dosages. We'll let Steve go first, then we'll go Matt go. So this is basically, let's say I was going to do a cycle of 500 milligrams of testosterone per week. The idea would be, you know, week one, I'd maybe do 200 milligrams per week. Week two, I would do 350. And then on week three, I get to my full dosage. And then when I finish my cycle, it'd be the same thing. I taper off. So I go from 500 per week to maybe like 350 per week to 200 per week to 100 per week and then off. Steve, what are your thoughts on this? And then Matt, what are your thoughts on tapering up and tapering down?
Well, I mean, this is a classic example of not understanding how esters work. And I understand it. A lot of people, you know, we're used to taking stuff like an aspirin. You get a headache or whatever, you take an aspirin. Or you get indigestion, you take a Tums. Or you take Pepto-Bismol or something, and it's done. And then the next day you get a headache again, you take another aspirin. So people don't really understand the way steroids work. Steroids have long esters that are attached, right? So they work differently than these short-acting oral drugs. So when you inject a steroid, it gets into your system. It starts raising, hits a peak, and then starts dropping off. And then when you inject again, say you're injecting a longer ester twice a week or every 4 days, each time you inject, more goes in your system and more gets added as the prior injection is ticking off. But as you inject over time, 2, 3, 4 weeks into a cycle, you will hit a peak level where it peaks in your system. So by tapering up to start off a cycle, you're basically just doing what the esters are going to do anyway. And if you taper off, the opposite effect. You stop injecting steroids, people don't understand. They think the next day or after 2 days, the steroid is magically out of your system. It doesn't work like that. It has to slowly taper off on its own because these are long esters with long half-lives. So let's say you're on a 12-week cycle of a long ester, say cypionate or enanthate, which is decently long esters, 10, 12-day half-lives. It's going to take about 50 days for that ester to really get out of your system because that last injection you had is going to be in your system for 50 days. Then the injection you had, the second to last injection, is going to be in your system for 50 days. Then the third to last injection is going to be your system for that 50 days from that point. So as you see, it's going to taper off on its own. So this tapering up and tapering down is basically not going to change the fact that these esters are basically, building up in your system, quote unquote, and then tapering out of your system. So you're basically just doing what the esters are already doing. So essentially, it's kind of silly. So just run whatever dose you want from day one all the way for 12 weeks. You don't have to taper up. You don't have to taper down, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with Steve. Our bodies like stability. They like everything to be homeostasis, right? So if you're going to run a 12-week cycle and you're going to build up for 4 weeks, maintain for four, and then taper down for four, you're never really getting to that point. And when you don't have stability, especially with hormones, what ends up happening is you get side effects. How are you supposed to control estrogen when you're never running a constant dose? How are you supposed to know how your body reacts when things are always up and down and up and down? Your body's going to hate you. You're more likely to probably get the side effects like acne and things like that because, think about teenagers, right? Their hormones are all over the place, and that's when they have things like oily skin and acne and, all the things that happen during puberty. So I think what Steve said is correct. Just run the dose you're going to run from day one to week 12, and then just run your PCT. And especially if you're running long esters, they'll go out of your system slowly anyways. You don't have to worry about doing it yourself.
The guy who emailed me this question, all I replied was KISS, keep it simple, stupid. But then I sent a follow-up email saying we're going to discuss your question on the podcast. So our last topic, I'll let Steve introduce it because he's Mr. Relationship Expert. It's basically women who test and are defensive. Steve, let's let you introduce the topic here.
This is a really good one. And I remember seeing David Weigand, who was on, I believe, episode 55. And he talks about this a lot. And I just want to bring this up because as men, we don't really understand this. And women do this a lot. I'm sure Matt, you know, he's been married a long time and he has to deal with this type of thing from his wife. And I'm curious to hear both of your experiences with this. But in my experiences, I notice women, especially like as you get older, they tend to like to test us. And the reason for that is because they've had men in the past like break their hearts, cheat on them, you know, fuck with them, all this stuff, fuck them and leave them, all this stuff. All the stuff you can imagine has happened to them. So they like to test us. It could be they may try to like set up a fake account online, maybe on social media to try to see if you bite. They might try to pick a fight with you over something stupid. They might just try to fuck with you and say, yeah, I'm going to go do this tonight, you know, because they want to see how you react. Like, oh, is this guy going to get jealous that I'm going out with a friend from work who is a male?
Classic one for, you know, women of my age demographic. So, you know, early to late 20s is that they'll get one of their friends who they know that you don't know to start flirting with you and see, you know, if you take them up on them, if you take their number, things like that. Like, I've seen women do that very, very often. I've seen guys fall for it.
Yeah, that's something more, you know, you would, but it's like, you know, the thing is though, you can't like, whether they're doing that or whether they're doing the, you know, the other examples I gave you, you cannot fall into their trap, you know, because they're trying to test you to see what you're going to do. So you just want to basically just take a step back and realize that women are women and they're very insecure by nature and they're going to want to test you to see, does this guy really like me? You know, and they'll kind of like, they like to kind of set deadlines on stuff. Like you'll be dating them like for a month and they'll like hit you with, you know what? I don't want to continue this without being exclusive. Or at some point, like a year or two in a relationship, they'll be like, look, I need a ring. I mean, I need it. So they'll kind of try to test you to see how you react to certain things. So it's a really, I'm curious to hear you guys' perspective on it, because this is something, if you screw it up, you can actually end up looking like an insecure bitch yourself. So you really got to be careful the way you react to these little tests that women do.
Let's let Matt go here, because I find that it's probably older women who are going to be doing this because their biological clock is ticking. You know, generally younger women, they're kind of just like, oh, to have fun. Like they don't take life too seriously. It's kind of when women get in their 30s or 40s, like, okay, crap, I need to find a mate and I need to get something in my womb so that they start doing these tests. So Matt, like what is the happily married Masonic say about all this?
For me, it's more like having one up on the other person. So the way that I get tested is, like she'll tell me things and if I don't remember them, I'm in shit. Like if something's coming up, like we have something to do and it's a month down the road, guaranteed I forget. Like I forget everything. So I'm starting to learn to kind of track these things, but it will typically be something like that. Or, you know, am I taking the initiative to plan something if it's, you know, like our kid's birthday or something like that, where I know she's going to do it because she wants to plan it her way and be anal about it. But if I don't at least pretend like I'm going to take the initiative, then I'm in trouble. And I'm like, well, come on, you know? So that's kind of the way that I get tested now. God, the younger ones, like that's pretty dirty to get a friend, because I think like I flirt now more than ever. And it's like, that's how we live. Like that's how we survive being married. We flirt with all of our friends. Like she does it with the guys. I do it with the girls. We're married, but we're not dead. So I think that's just part of having fun. Taking the number, like, yeah, that's probably where you cross the line. Then you're probably in trouble, but you got to still have fun too.
It's so interesting to hear like how messed up women get once they're older and married. I feel bad for both of you.
The thing is, like, I'm curious, Matt, if you go through the same thing, like, they'll try to pick a fight with you like every week or two just to see how you react. It's not even, they'll just pick a fight over any little thing just to see, like, does this guy react? Does this guy get a temper? Does this guy, I'm trying to see, I want this guy to kind of like snap at me just to see if he's an asshole. Cause I want to get that satisfaction.
I do get some stuff like that. And half of it is because we have opposite personalities. So I'm pretty well like chilled out. She's more like Trevor. Like, she's got to go all the time, million things to do. I don't got time for this.
You,
yeah. Well, hey, that's what it is. So I will get once in a while the, well, you don't give a shit. Well, no, I do give a shit. Just because I'm not yelling about it, just because I don't want to fight, I still give a shit. But I'm not going to fight about that, you know, I should have cut the lawn yesterday instead of today. I'm not going to argue. So yeah, I do get the fights.
You should just be like, just because I don't use my outdoor voice as my regular tone of voice doesn't mean I don't care. I don't know. Speaking of which, we got Boston Lloyd and his girlfriend. We got two guests next week. Actually, not next week, on Thursday. So coming up in a couple days here. So that'll be good to get a woman's perspective, and hopefully she can clear up some of all of our confusion on how women work and their crazy thinkings. So that's the next episode. We got Boston coming on. He's going to be coming on with his girlfriend. It's going to be mainly a women-focused episode. We're going to get some info from Boston, of course, but it's mainly going to be about, you know, his girlfriend. His girlfriend, she's going to be totally open, and she's going to talk about her experiences with steroids. What steroids are good to take for females, what steroids females should not take. She has used, you know, very androgenic steroids, you know, steroids that we don't generally recommend for females. So she can talk about some of the side effects she's experienced, all those sorts of things. It's going to be a really, really good episode, especially if you are a female or, you know, if your significant other is in this sport. It'd be a really, really good episode to listen to. For your host, Trevor Caritzen, for my co-host, Steve Smee, for my second co-host, Matt, also known as Masonic Bodybuilder on the evolutionary.org and elitefitness.com forums, this has been another episode of Evolutionary Radio. Live your life, look good doing it. We'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.